Just in time for Thanksgiving, you've put together a program of films about children who are Nazis, possessed by the devil, the spawn of the devil, or generally evil. Why Thanksgiving? Why this program?
This is something that I, you know, pitched to Richard Pena a few times, and finally he said, yes, I could do it. Sent me an email, and he said, I could go ahead and do it. And those 3 days happened to be available.
Well, the timing's great, because this is the moment when everyone's getting together with their kids.
Exactly.
You know, and now they can go to the Upper West Side, the Lincoln Center, and see evil children.
And it is a movie-going weekend. You know?
What inspired you to put this program together?
Well, I wanted to do a theme-based retrospective. The others I've done have always focused on a specific talent. And what first came to mind was doing something around children and young adults. Not necessarily evil, but being a lover of horror and psychological thriller and drama, it sort of started taking a turn to the dark side in my head. So I started thinking of all of these films that I've loved over the years and started making a list and getting in touch with my contacts at the studios to see what prints were available. And I came up with these 11 films that we're going to be showing.
Well, you know, if speaking of horror, if mm-hmm. the vampire is a figure of kind of sexualized horror,
okay.
and the zombie is sort of lends itself to social metaphors,
uh-huh.
what does the problem child say in terms of the horror genre?
Well, in terms of the horror genre, I think studios and filmmakers have always been drawn to material that concerns children on a dark level, because it's always been fascinating and it's always been a moneymaker. I've always been fascinated with, you know, horror films that involve children. I love vampire movies. I'm a Dracula fanatic, you know, going way back, Hammer and, you know, all that stuff. But I just thought this would be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And what was nice is when I started thinking about all the different films, it did have a variety. It wasn't just supernatural. It was also psychological, mentally disturbed, abused. It goes in a lot of different directions.
Right. Well, that fascination with the sort of dysfunctional child, the problem child, the evil child,
yeah.
you know, it really speaks to kind of anxiety about the family.
It does. It does. I wouldn't say I come from a dysfunctional family. I come from a bit of an offbeat family. You know, when I was growing up, my idea of spending a Saturday afternoon, I grew up in Los Angeles, would be getting on the bus on Ventura Boulevard and going to Hollywood Boulevard, getting off at the corner of Hollywood and Highland, spending the day on Hollywood Boulevard, going to the movies, seeing a film with a friend. Usually just one friend that was just like me. And then we'd spend the rest of the time on Hollywood Boulevard going into various haunts like Larry Edmonds' movie bookstore, which probably no longer exists, Cherokee comic book store, which was this wild comic book store upstairs in this old building. I was also a collector of horror film magazines when I was young. So that was how I spent my days.
Yeah, and one of the films that you're showing in the series, The Exorcist,
yeah.
you saw at a very young age.
I did see it at a very young age. I was in fifth grade. I think I was about 11 and a half. I remember when it came out, it was the talk of the town. Everybody was talking about The Exorcist and how you had to see The Exorcist. The lines were, to get into the film, averaged between 5 and 8 hour waits.
And you were how old?
I think I was 11 and a half.
And what did seeing this film do to your 11-year-old brain?
Oh, well, what did it do to my 11-year-old brain? Well, first of all, it terrified me. It was everything that it lived up to be and everything that everybody was talking about. The special effects were unbelievable. It's true that people were fainting and having to leave the theater. All that stuff is true. Actually, when I was sitting watching the movie, this young woman got up. She was probably in the third row. We were towards the back. She was walking up the aisle of the National Theater in Westwood Village, and she collapsed. She fainted. And the ushers had to go and get her and take her out. True story.
With a lot of these problem child films, there's a double reaction in the audience. Mm-hmm. One, you're horrified at what these kids are doing.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you can kind of relate. And it's kind of exciting to live vicariously through these evil tantrums that people are having. It's you know, on the one hand, being sort of frightened of them. On the other hand, you know, it almost vicariously acting out with these children. Do you think there's a kind of, there's a push-pull with that maybe in these movies?
I think, depending on who you are, there is. and how you react to them. I was never really, you know, pulling for Reagan McNeil when she was abusing those priests.
Right, but there's like a thrill in a film like The Omen to watch this kid kind of you know assume this demonic power and destroy his pretty boring.
Well, he is the Antichrist, you know, aided by that terrible nanny, played by Billy Whitelaw, who's a wonderful British actress. Definitely.
Let's also go back to this idea of the archetype of the problem child.
Okay.
You know, we talked about sort of the vampires and the zombies.
Yeah,
and
right.
The problem child is definitely a kind of archetype of horror cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, you know, what do you think the role of that kind of trope of the horror film is?
Well, again, I mean, I think
how is it used by filmmakers to, what kind of anxieties are brought out by that sort of device?
Well, I think it's taking the innocence of a child and exploiting it in a way, you know, that portrays evil and violence, supernatural works.
So that's interesting, that idea of the subversion of the innocence, that the child is sort of the iconic innocent figure.
Yeah.
And these movies.
Well, they truly are. I mean, in The Innocents, for example, the children truly are innocent. You know, they're possessed by the former governess and handyman of the estate. They're ghosts, you know, and Deborah Kerr is this figure that becomes aware of it and, you know, wants to save them.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the films in the series. You're showing some of the iconic problem child films like The Omen and The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. What are some of the more obscure, rare titles that are in this program that you're proud to be showing?
Well, Tomorrow the World, definitely, which is a film that I discovered fairly recently. Actually, it was something that my father recommended to me, and we couldn't think of the title of the film, and finally we figured it out. The best way for me to describe Tomorrow the World is The Little Rascals meets The Boys from Brazil with a touch of Ozzie and Harriet.
This is about a child Nazi.
It's about a child Nazi. It's based on a play. Emil Bruckner, Skippy Hohmeyer. Hohmeyer is the actor. He just came off doing it on Broadway. This kid's amazing. His performance is unbelievable in this film. He's adopted by Frederick March, his American uncle, who's a college professor. So he moves to this little college town in mid-America. And he's a little Nazi. He's been completely brainwashed. And his cousin, the little girl who lives in the house, is just so eager to bring him to school and make friends and everything else, but he's not willing to change. And it just continues to go on. Agnes Moorehead is also in the film. She's absolutely wonderful. Another amazing thing about this film is the most incredible juvenile fight scene you've ever seen I've ever seen. It's one of the best fight scenes I've ever seen in a film.
Describe that scene. Who's fighting who?
Skippy. Emil is fighting the little boy, his friend. Well, actually, his cousin's friend, after he hits his cousin on the head with a fireplace poker in the basement. He runs away and he escapes into the woods. And these three boys go after him and chase him down. Finally, this one boy gets him and the two of them start fighting. It's an extraordinary scene. It's unbelievably staged and choreographed. One of the best fights I've ever seen in film.
You know, I imagine that child actors have a lot of fun playing evil.
Yeah.
You know, you get to sort of act out.
I guess you do.
Yeah.
But I think in these films, too, so much of it is the director. You know, I want to talk a little bit about Martin Stevens, who is actually in two of the films in the series, Village of the Damned and The Innocence, an unbelievably talented young actor. I actually tracked him down. We've had numerous phone conversations. He told me, I said to him, Martin, you know, your performance in The Innocence was so unbelievable. It was so specific and so right on. And I said, why is that? And he said, well, patience. Jack Clayton, the director, had unbelievable patience. And I think that's the key in a lot of these films, is the directors having such patience to be able to extract these performances out of these young actors.
One of the things that interests me about this series is, in my experience, film programmers think about movies in really interesting ways. They see patterns amongst them. They like to mix them up and sort of do a kind of intellectual montage between films. But it's rare that you see a film program devoted to a theme or an idea. Most film programs are about a national cinema, a particular director, a particular actor. Why do you think there's this reluctance to have kind of idea, thematic-driven film programming?
It's a good question, and I don't know if I really have the answer to it, which is why I'm really happy I'm doing this, because it'll be a really good experiment to see how it does.
Do you think there's a sense that institutionally people think audiences won't understand if this is a thematic show? We have to give them this famous director. We have to give them something they can wrap their heads around. Do you think there's a reluctance?
Well, I think maybe there is a reluctance, but, you know, why wouldn't they understand? I mean, this particular series is such a specific theme. I think it really depends on what the theme is. I think everybody, well, the movie-going audience, the retrospective movie-going audience, has gotten very adjusted to series that focus on a particular talent, whether it be a director or an actor.
I mean, maybe even at the level of sophisticated repertory programming like Lincoln Center, it's still in some sense star-driven.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing with my programming is I wanted to bring a little bit of mainstream fun into the mix.
Well, the film study could use it.
Oh.
I could use a little more fun off-the-wall programming.
Well, that's what I wanted to do. Just make it a little bit more fun.
Thanks, Josh, for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.